When they love you most once they know you're leaving. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast. It can be found at thatsomls.com with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Nick, were you at the big spectacle on the weekend, the Pride Night, Alphonso Davies at Palooza?
The Alphonso Davies going away party? I was there. And I plan to be at every single game. And what sucks is that, like, the week before, I was talking about, as a season ticket holder, I don't know if I have any hope. And then to see that,
yeah.
And then go, but I still don't really have any hope because we just sold our best player.
It's weird. It's weird.
I was there. I only teared up twice. So, yeah.
There's a conversation to be had. My instincts as a promoter is that if you are, like, selling, being a selling team is one thing, but it's like, being a selling team is kind of good in terms of, it's a good role in the larger, in the world sort of economy. But if you constantly are talking up some other team, it does kind of make you feel less special.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I still think the move is a good idea. What the money will be able to do for so many aspects of our club, which not a lot of people have talked about, but I've read things about how much money the Whitecaps company is losing, and which is not unusual. Most sports teams actually lose a crap ton of money, and many people are surprised when they learn that, you know, the Man United's, Real Madrid's hemorrhage money left, right, and center. But that means that they've got backing where people... It's a hobby for people, right? A billionaire comes in and they're quite content to spend a ton of money, and the teams do draw in incredible amounts of money, but they're spending far more than they're making. But, you know, that's what it takes for some of the big clubs. So,
I just
hopefully this puts the... Sorry, go ahead.
I agree that the money is good. It's weird because there's a part of me that worries that if this just becomes a season-long ad for Bayern Munich, that it could be bad for the team's attention span once everybody leaves. But Canadian media is weird in that, like, you know, the Edmonton media now covers Alphonso Davies like a local story, and they didn't for the last 2 years as much.
Well, I think it's actually going to be good media training for Alphonso Davies because now everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And pay attention. And, you know, what even I think, you know, what Carl Robinson, the Whitecaps have been talking up for so long about this player. Now we're seeing global interest and, you know, people talk about MLS being a retirement league. You'd think this would be the nail in the coffin of that theory. Mm-hmm. If we're, you know, selling a 17-year-old to one of the biggest clubs in Europe. Clearly there's young talent being produced.
We've had other players before, you know, Canada has, and Davies in the interview that we did with him in August was saying, you know, Atiba's the first player I have ever known that played in the Champions League. Well, maybe there's going to be a second one coming up here pretty quick. Maybe he's going to meet a lot more soon. But all this came to a head at the league game on the weekend between Vancouver and Minnesota. Vancouver, after sort of reversing their slide by beating Montreal in the Canadian Championship with a 2-0 home result, then comes and beats Minnesota 4-2.
Also a game I was at.
How's that?
Really heartening. I skipped softball, even though I really wanted to go to that to watch the Canadian Championship, because I just needed to see a different Whitecaps side, and I knew that there would be significant changes to what we've seen in MLS. Mm-hmm. And that was great to see. It was nervy a couple of times. Seattle missed an absolute sitter right in front of goal early on. It was just really exciting to see some different form, like some different combinations of players, and I'm still just, especially after seeing that game, I'm amazed that Russell Tybert isn't starting, although I think that's going to change because he's just so much more calmer on the pitch and seems to know what Carl Robinson wants and can execute it and never loses focus. And just, it's always a treat. And we talk about watching Alphonso Davies cut through defenders and dribble through defenders and score great goals and get great assists. But watching Russell Tybert close down gaps and chase after players is also an absolutely delightful thing to watch. The man never stops moving. Mm-hmm. And for a team that can at times be flat and lack creativity, you know, Russell Tybert is not a star player by any stretch, and he has a lot he can improve on, but the work ethic, the work rate of him is just phenomenal.
That was on my birthday, but I had to go to bed early because I had to wake up very early the next day for work, so I was only able to see the first half. I wasn't able to get the birthday gift that the Whitecaps bestowed for me. And because for whatever reason, Canada Soccer took the live stream off of the website, so there was no place to see the game and there was no highlights online.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the Canadian Premier League will change things and have some coverage of games, hopefully, so that those who are wanting to grow the sport in Canada can actually see the sport in Canada.
Especially, you know, like you know, I think it's tough because I know that maybe the broadcaster interest is not there, but with DAZN operating in Canada, you feel like you could maybe flip some. If DAZN is playing like Pan Am basketball, you gotta feel like maybe you can flip some Canada soccer stuff to them. And
well, and my thing is like, if you're already filming it, then what does it cost you to just put it up somewhere? And okay, so maybe 400 people watch it, but you've already, it's in the can. It exists as a digital product.
Yeah.
How long does it take to upload to any website? I don't care which one it's on. We're rabid soccer fans. We'll find it, but like, at least put it up. But that's been a major complaint about this series is most people couldn't even watch it.
The finals will take place in the next few weeks. In the meantime, they had this win at Minnesota. I feel like, for, you know, it had everything. The Whitecaps were doing a lot to make the pride message felt. Unlike the Minnesota game, there was an actual gay player on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because Colin Martin, who came out on the day of Minnesota's Pride Night, but then didn't play, was subbed in the 82nd minute. Ooh,
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Shit. Well, and this is I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the things I was really impressed with, and we, Lord knows, we need a good news story about the Whitecaps, and we have a go at their front office and some of their decision making. But all year long, they've been doing this kids captain thing at each match, where they pick, you know, they have a very close relationship with BC Women and Children's Hospital here, do a lot of outreach with them. And so they've sort of been picking kids from the community to sort of be the captain of the match. And they're actually announced as part of the starting 11.
Oh, really?
Which it's just a really nice gesture. And I like that it's not totally tokenistic. It's like they announce the starting 11, and then up on the Jumbotron, they do the exact same, like, the kid is in a video and appears on the screen, and then they're at the match, and they kind of have a little presentation at the beginning of the match. It's just a nice thing to do.
People remember.
But what I've seen in years past with MLS Pride Night, and I'm just so glad it exists, but it's sort of like any corporate approach to pride, where it's just like, be proud, pride, we have pride, it's Pride Night. It's like, but what are you proud of beyond having some rainbow colored flags? Like, no one will actually just say the words.
Yes.
And the kid captain they picked has like started like an ally group at her school and is like obviously queer, but they like, you know, they kind of let her just do her own thing and explain herself, and I was just like, that's really fucking cool as a club, that,
yeah,
to see that they're not trying to hide behind anything. They're picking a queer kid on Pride Night to represent the club, and they're not treating it in a tokenistic way. I was pleasantly surprised by it, that they actually specifically mentioned LGBTQ pride, not just this vague pride. Mm-hmm. Are you proud? Just be proud.
Yes. We're very accepting of what we can't say.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt, and this is what I heard from people as well, that people felt very dialed in, or sorry, that people did feel like there was genuine outreach, and that it was more than just a marketing gesture. Although I definitely have got a friend to pick me up one of those scarves. So
yeah, and you know, and that's the reality as well. I mean, it's a corporate entity, and they're trying to get in with a certain fan base. But I think it's great to acknowledge your queer fan base, and you know. The nice thing, too, is that, like, I didn't have any trepidation about it, wasn't worried about anybody saying anything stupid. I mean, I'm sure it happened somewhere, but, like, all the supporters groups got behind it, as you would expect. And it was nice. And I also like that, you know, both teams come out and both teams have the rainbow numbers on their backs and that they make a special kit for it. I think I used to be a little kind of like look down my nose at that stuff that seemed tokenistic, but it also shows a support, like a show of solidarity amongst the teams. And I think it matters to people. And I certainly think it especially matters to young people watching the game that they feel like there's a place for them there.
I think that there's broader topics to discuss in terms of the way that people feel belonging through soccer. In a meaningful way, make people feel like they can. Because I often say, like, it's you know, there's not that many opportunities in life to be able to just yell as loud as you can for 90 minutes, right? You're able to be a sort of, you know, a full.
There should be more.
It's true. You're able to be a full version of yourself. And I feel like for queer people who maybe have experienced being in the closet, or just experience a certain type of, you know, mediated expression, to allow them to have that full, to encourage that full expression all throughout the season, but especially on that game, is very important.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I forgot that in the scarf presentation that they do, with which is like the supporters clubs give a scarf to the kid captain, mm-hmm. there's also two drag queens in the background.
Yes.
Like, as part of the presentation, where I was just like, okay, you know what? Like, I like this.
They had one of the drag queens do a merch presentation video, too, which was fun. Again, yeah. Again, it's a promotion, but also, like, I was taken by it, so it's fine. The party itself was started on 35 minutes with a great goal from Yuri Reyna that the goal was great, but also the hold-up play was really special on it.
Yeah, I feel like somebody must have gotten in Reyna's ear about staying on his feet and being a little bit more positive in his play. And I think my note for this was as good as he's played as a white cap. Mm-hmm. And that was really great to see, because he's been up and down this season. Robinson's been singing his praises, but he's had a lot of really flat performances where he just gets frustrated and he starts, you know, kind of flopping around. But this was just such a, you know, looking for his teammates, looking to contribute, and having that little bit of extra spark in what he did was pretty incredible.
I think that this season is one, if all the things that had happened in his life, you would have really expected him to be a leader, to pick up after Freddie Montero left. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't happened. And I think that, you know, if we're already starting to look to next season and in the winter transfer window and everything, it's like, this is an opportunity for Reyna to establish himself as one of the leading faces of the team. It's kind of up to him to take it or not.
Well, it's very clear that he's also been protected by the media protected from the media by the club.
Yeah.
And you know, regardless of what the circumstances were that happened in the off season, you feel like, you know, he was cleared of all wrongdoing, but just seemed to really lack focus all season long. And
we've made clear, you say, and, you know, we can't get into the full, we don't have the full research in front of us for every episode, but even if he was cleared of all wrongdoing, that was a situation that didn't reflect well on him at all. And it really is up to him to kind of make amends with himself about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard too, because I think you and I have our own ideas and about how we feel about a player like that, but also have to talk about soccer and talk about their performance on the pitch. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. You can't pretend that he didn't play. And similar circumstances around Montero as well. Like, a person can be a garbage person, or there can be lack of clarity around their personal life, but unfortunately they're where they are and we have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I do like to, you know.
So just know that we're not trying to sweep it under the rug.
No, and hence why, like, I bring it up, and I'm not trying to say, like, oh, his performance really suffered from that. It's like, but it, yeah, I agree with you. It's like, the ball is in his court to redeem himself in whatever way he needs to, because you and I don't know. Mm. But certainly in terms of the soccer side of things, it has felt like most of the season he's kind of missed his opportunity to step into a leadership role and also just be a teammate. Yeah. He kind of seems like a bit of an island at times. He's a unique soccer talent, but there's not always the chemistry there, connecting with other players. And this was one where you sort of saw him open up a little bit and be a little bit more positive in his play, and not just look for making an amazing pass, but just know where everybody is around him, but also see that those flashes of brilliant individual skill that he has.
Despite the fact that it was an individual goal, it was registered as an assist for Alphonso Davies, the first on his two-goal, two-assist night, and I feel like his whole run, it's kind of funny because it's like he's scored as many goals in the last 2 months as he's ever scored.
Yeah.
In MLS, and I feel like he's always, if you look back to, you know, the Canada game, which I was thinking about a bunch because I was looking through that old interview footage where he got a red card. It's like, mm-hmm. he's really confidence-based in a way, I feel. Like, when he's feeling...
Yeah.
Like this has been so much positive for him, and I think there's been, you know, concern about making sure that things don't get to his head. But obviously, he's been paying attention. And he performed to the level of what everybody kind of dreamed he could be, you know?
Yeah. And I think we all will continue to expect that. He's got himself to blame for the pressure that's going to be heaped on him from a performance like that. But that's what was so positive to see, is he'd been away for 2 weeks and missed a ton of training. Mm-hmm. It was something like 10 days of training he missed to get this deal with Bayern done, and to come back, play a full 90 minutes and just destroy, like just play a wide open game. It was interesting because I saw at halftime, Carl Robinson came back with his arm over his shoulder and they were walking onto the pitch together. And Carl Robinson was talking in his ear the entire time they were walking back to the sideline. And you can only imagine what he said, but I feel like part of it was just enjoy yourself. Like, yeah. You know, play your game and play your style and execute. The unsung hero for me of this match is actually Jake Nowinski, because there was so many good performances on the pitch and a couple not so great. But Jake Nowinski played all three games in the week, and I thought had three pretty exceptional performances, and is another player that seems to really depends on his confidence level, but his defending has improved. He's much sharper marking in the box. He's much quicker at getting back, but we're beginning to see a bit of finesse to what we saw last year, at least the beginnings of, is him getting into wide areas and crossing balls in. He's exceptional at, and It was extremely helpful on Wednesday, and we saw again how dangerous he can be on the following Saturday game as well.
And correct me if I'm wrong, he basically, this is a great response as well to basically losing his place to a certain degree. I'm trying to read back to make sure that that's true. He wasn't used. He was on the subs bench for for 6 of 7 games on a stretch from April to May. He
Yeah, Franklin did kind of overtake him a little bit. And I don't think anybody ever questioned Jake Nowinski's talent or his physical ability, like his just athleticism. But his confidence and his ability to execute in both boxes sort of seemed to wane a little bit. And it's nice to see him kind of tighten that up and take that spot back. And it says a lot. Carl Robinson's not afraid of swapping out players because of their travel schedule. So if you're playing all 3 games in an 8-day period or a 9-day period, you've earned that. And when you look at the squad, there's actually very few players that have earned that.
So you Davies doubles the lead with a nice cutback, the first of his goals, I think, and this is where, he scores in the and Peter Schott yells some words in German just to make sure that we are aware. Lighting up Michael Boxall, another former Whitecap, and then he is able to play through to Kamara for the Whitecaps' third goal and create this wonderful 3-0 lead for Vancouver. The weirdness of this team, and I think that it's not just Davies, it goes through the whole thing, is that it's so based on emotion and confidence to the point where when they're there mentally, it is 100% solid. And they can just suddenly disengage, as they did through the 80 minutes of this game. They and concede twice in 5 minutes and make you think, wait, are they going to lose this?
Well, it's funny because it was such a positive start, and then of all the people, it was my mom that texted me, and she's like, "I thought you said Minnesota was going to tear us apart." And 5 minutes after she sent that message, they scored 2 goals, and I was like, "Remember when I said they did a very good job of containing Minnesota's attacking threat." The first goal, I think, yeah, there was a slight miscommunication or mistake, but also I was just like, whatever, it's a weird goal and it happens. The second was one was just a complete lack of concentration. But I agree, they're just sort of Vancouver is a very fair weather team, and that seems to haunt all teams from this city. That there's just some special magical fairy dust that needs to be in the air that night to make them win. And they're like, oh wait, we know how to do this. We're great.
They concede that second
and
goal, and then 2 minutes later, Alphonso Davies is just like, let me get this for you.
Exactly. Yeah. But we have a ton of games to talk about, man. We've 23 minutes on Vancouver. I mean, that's fair. We had to.
And 2 games. There was 2 games there.
That's true.
And one of the in the Canadian
We may
Championship,
not cover them all.
you would a couple of weeks ago say that their opponents Toronto would be an easy out, but with Josie Altidore back, they were able to have a very powerful 3-0 win against Chicago.
Very powerful. This was a great statement from them. And it's difficult watching a game like this because it says a lot about Toronto and a lot about Altidore being back. But I really couldn't help but just focus on Chicago. And this is my question to you. Like, Chicago, I think for the first 40 minutes looked okay and like they might have something in this, but after that it just was completely gone. And this wasn't a 3-0 blowout where Toronto just took all 3 goals really quickly and stormed the place. It kind of slowly happened, and Giovinco had to really work at it to finally get his goal. What is going on for you with Chicago? Because for the life of me, on paper and even on the pitch, you watch some of their performances and you think like, okay, this is a good team. This is as good of a Chicago side as we've ever seen. And it can't just be that, Nikolic is not having the luck and putting the ball in the back of the net. It's like there's something missing from this team, probably a win. Is it just a confidence thing? Because I don't get it. You know, when I think about when Schweinsteiger came to the club and the pieces they added and what they were able to do, it still needed some work, but they didn't change a lot of pieces. They didn't sell some really key player. Did they just not add enough? Are they just not focused defensively? I mean, I know the answer to that one. But, like, why does this team continue to struggle so much?
Well, I would kind of look at the first thing that I would say is that it hasn't happened the whole season. It's been a real shift. And when you see that kind of shift, you've got to make some changes. Chicago has brought in Nicklas Hässler from TFC, who is a great pickup. And they also did that deal. That's it. I think that's it for deals for them recently.
No, I think you're right. They did bring in someone else, didn't they? You keep talking. I'll research.
They've tried to make some of these moves. Sometimes when you do make, like, this actually, you know, teams have had way better luck with midseason moves than I consider to be the normal this year. But sometimes if you bring, it's not a cure-all because people have to learn to play together. But there is, we talked a lot about how Schweinsteiger calmed things down and was able to sort of move the ball. Like, his role wasn't necessarily scoring goals. It was last year. It was like coordinating the attack. And I don't know if that has stopped working for him, but maybe it wasn't all Schweinsteiger in terms of how the ball moves up the pitch, because the ball still gets to him and he still plays good. He still makes good plays with it. But I kind of feel like there isn't a lot going forward. And I don't know if that's how the ball is moving throughout the whole pitch. And you've got to feel like there's a lot of their central defenders have been pretty much the same pairing all season. But you've got to think that I just looked at the pair and they started, Vincent and Kapelhoff have started every game. I don't know if one of them is like a right back that's being subbed in or something, but I do think that it is something defensive, not just in how the defense is organizing, but also how they are then responding and moving the ball back up the pitch.
Yeah, defending as a team and defending from the front as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy Raheem Edwards is the other player they acquired.
Yes, that's right. I think we need to bring this up, but yes, Raheem Edwards has moved from Montreal to Chicago, which is, I think, his like third official club of the season since ending the year with Toronto FC.
I believe it is, and I think they brought him in for precisely a bit of that, a bit of a wider player who can also play in the middle, but bring some speed. And watching this game, I felt like Chicago looked like their movement was a little better. But all your points are taken. I still scratch my head a little bit at how Chicago is not winning more games with the personnel that they have. And maybe it is a just motivational confidence thing.
So this is the
I totally took away from, like, I'm not purposely trying to avoid the fact that Toronto had a brilliant performance here and looked as good as they've looked in a while. But I think it is important to come back to Toronto is beating opponents that they would handily destroy last season, and they have to.
Yeah.
So I really don't feel like Toronto's faced a real test yet with Altidore back, which they will do in the coming weeks.
When they played Chicago just last week for some reason, I don't know why they were, it's like, you know, July 21st, July 28th, like it's a cup tie. But at the same time, you rose this alarm of don't be too excited about Chicago yet because Chicago has been playing so poorly. But I do have written down on my notes after in that first goal where you know, it's played through, and then the player is saved by the goalkeeper, and then a shot comes off a defender, and then Josie comes in to ram it home, and I just have metaphor. They were trying so hard.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Hey, Josie, well, Josie's here now.
My big takeaway from this one is that Chicago Fire and Orlando City have now given up more goals than the Whitecaps, so we are now third worst defensively in the league, which is nice to not be first worst.
We're number three.
Yeah. Jeez, you gotta find something to cheer for, right? A team that had a good week, I'm just checking to make sure that this statement is true, is Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Continuing. I've had some funny looks from people when I talk about Philadelphia is actually a good team, and they played the sort of fair weather Houston when you're never quite sure which team is going to show up and how they're going to perform. But a 3-1 win over Houston, I thought was a big statement from the club.
Yeah.
And a good win on the road as well. Philadelphia's had a terrible road record, so that was big for them. Mm-hmm. I just have, like, Houston's just continuing to play so inconsistently and sloppy. What do you take away from this for both teams?
So I think that the one note of caution I would put on the Philadelphia thing, and I think Philadelphia fans are probably going to have noted this, that there were the two very close goals on offside. Now, I don't know if you would throw out both of them, but I feel like the close study, with close study, it may be different on one or the other. But the fact is, on the second Philadelphia goal, after Houston has already taken the lead, and after it's 1-1 in anyone's game, I feel like after that second goal, Houston looks so defeated, and they have this penalty kick. But Houston's not even really moving before on the play that leads to the PK.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that just even before they had the penalty conceded, which is unfair to them, but at the same time,
if we can jump back and forth a little bit, when we look at their later in the week, their loss to Portland, and we know Portland has been on a bit of a surge and has been very difficult to break down, you see the same kind of things come to fruition, is that we know Elise and Kyoto can certainly make things interesting.
They looked so much better in that game, too.
They did, and I actually felt like this was a much better result against Portland.
A 2-1 win at home.
For Portland, yeah. But and maybe it was just a bit of magic for Adi because he's getting traded, but, like, honestly, that last play that wins the game, there was 3 or 4 opportunities to get that ball out of the box, and you still have defenders standing around waiting and looking to their goalkeeper. So is there just too much trust in the goalkeeper to make the final save there? Or, like, you've got Blanco, you've got Valeri, you've got, like, all of Portland's best players and Adi standing in the box, and this ball is, like, pinballing around, and Houston defenders are just sort of, like, swinging their heads left and right, being like, huh, huh.
You know, that might be it. It's hard to, I look at it and I'm trying to, decide how I feel about, I think Leonardo is known to be good, or am I just expecting that because he's Brazilian? But you may have that sort of issue when you have a player as good as Joe Willis, where you're sort of just sort of, you're waiting to see
Joe's,
what the end
Joe's
result
got it.
Joe, and it's not even so much as like leaving it to Joe, but like, it's not even so much as that, but just like expecting that the end result of whether or not this is going to be a goal or not will come from how things go with the save.
Yeah. And waiting for that.
I have it here for that last one that it's like, it's Adolfo Machado that lets him go. For the play that leads to that third penalty kick.
Yeah. And I actually feel like Portland has been guilty of this a few times this season as well, is is just relying on, because that happens on the Elise Kyoto connection. I forgot who actually scored the goal. I think it was Kyoto. Is that the Portland defense is sort of like waiting for the goalkeeper to pounce on it.
You can't, you cannot collapse on those two players like that. Like, you can't.
No, and like, he's surrounded. He's got nine players in the box. Like, you can't rely on your goalkeeper to just be everywhere and get everywhere in an instant. He can't see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You had the rare successfully connected bicycle goal. It got saved. In addition to, you know, Adi giving a goodbye present to the Portland fans, I also got to give good marks to Albus Powell's beautiful, beautiful looping ball that finds Blanco in a scenario where you can't. That's the opening goal. And from kicking it, nothing except a connection between those two players where Blanco sees the ball coming to Powell and knows what he's going to do. If there isn't that connection, it's like you can't kick there and just assume somebody is going to be there, except that they do, and there is.
So part of that is that the Houston defender, I think it's their central mid, and I apologize, I'm missing his name, but you see him check back and he sees Blanco, but he doesn't expect him to make the run, and that to me is one of the mistakes Houston continues to make is that. You know, they're trying to do this zonal marking thing, but why would you give a player like Blanco the chance? Like, what space are you covering? Why do you have three players looking at the player with the ball who's clearly going to cross it in? Blanco streaks in, but he's totally unmarked, and then you're chasing behind. Like, it's simple defensive tactics. And I'm not saying I want to ever defend against Blanco, but, like, he's in position to make the run. He's completely unmarked in midfield. What else is he going to do but make that run? And just looking behind you to see the space, I actually feel like is worse. The defender is aware of where he could run into, sees him, and then completely fails to pick him up and mark him. It's a great bit of skill from Blanco, but you know, if you keep him in front of you, there's a way to shut that shot down.
Well, we talked before about how speed is so immobilizing to an MLS defense.
Absolutely. And the way to quash that is to have good positioning so that you know where to be before the run is made, so you're not having to run after the attacking player. And I also, as a person that often has to defend in soccer, I'm saying this with a full, like, I get watching highlights and seeing things after the fact. It's easy to pick out what the mistake is. But the reason why I pick on it specifically is because this is not the first time. This is one of many times Houston's been burned by this, is there's just a lack of awareness about runs being made in, and there's not a defensive unit behind the ball. You're trusting your back four and your goalkeeper to pull up something magic, but who's marking Blanco when he can make a 30-yard run in and nobody's putting any pressure on him whatsoever?
Those 3 points for Portland do help them establish a foothold in the standings as sitting fourth in the Western Conference, but their Cascadian rivals are really catching up as Seattle won two big games this week.
Yeah, well, they won two games. Let's temper that somewhat. The first was against San Jose, which I think I'm not sure if they're a team anymore or even a city. I think they might have just collapsed into the ocean with global warming. San Jose just looks so desperately sad and weak in midfield and still just no ideas. I was actually amazed that this was one of the first matches I went back to and watched when I went, Seattle beat them 1-0? What happened? And I thought Seattle just played poorly. So San Jose did try a few different things. And I'm going to butcher the name here, but the Peruvian Seattle brought in.
Rui Diaz.
Rui Diaz. Just say it quickly. No one will know. Has just completely electrified their season. And I know a couple of other players have stepped up as well. Svensson's been fantastic, as we'll talk about in their next match. But it just shows the power of a signing that can bring in some confidence to the team, because it hasn't been his individual performances, because he's not been there long. He's only been there for a few matches. But yeah. They, San Jose to me is still my pick for the worst team in the league because they're just, they look completely out of ideas.
They had this, and we don't need to talk very much about it, but they had this 0-0 draw with RSL. I feel like
Please not talk about it.
without Mike Pecky, RSL doesn't have a lot going forward on defense. They kind of put things together, but
no.
They were two of four teams that really had disaster, just calamity team playing against each other, where it's like neither of them were able to achieve anything good with it, and they certainly weren't able to do that in this game. Seattle,
Go ahead.
Here was your thing about RSL.
Now, I was going to say, I have one note about this game that I think I can sum up in a sentence. It's the San Jose-RSL match that ended 0-0 later in the week. At least Andrew Tarbell and Nick Raimondo are good.
Yes, Tarbell was good.
San Jose has a decent goalkeeper, but holy shit, they're just so lacking creativity. And Alashi, who last week had a bust up with the coach, is out. He's also off to FC Cincinnati with Fernando Addy. So that's fun.
Yeah, the only other note from the San Jose Seattle game that I had is that Dempsey had this amazing 40-yard empty net goal that hit the goalpost, which is kind of like a metaphor for him and where he's at in his career.
Yeah, I missed that one, but I heard about it.
As much as you could say, like, oh, did they even underimpress by only beating San Jose 1-0? You gotta say that that coming up with a 3-1 win against New York is a real result.
It is a real result, and I think even since we started the podcast, we've talked about how New York City FC's position in the table often belies the problems that lurk underneath, mm-hmm. and the fact that they are still a beatable team. And we like to poke fun at them playing in a baseball stadium because it's always funny.
I'm going to see it soon. I'll let you know how silly it is.
That's right. Please take pictures. Bring your measuring tape. I want to know. I feel like this is a perfect example where it wasn't that New York City had a particularly poor performance or anything like that, because they won earlier in the week with a pretty dominant game over Orlando, but that's not saying much. It says more about Orlando than it says against New York City.
They hit the net, hit the post like 18 times.
Yeah, it also shows that they are vulnerable, and Seattle has just done such a good job of turning the team around and reinventing themselves. That they've been, I hate to take Seattle's side here, but they were just under so much adversity this year in terms of major injuries and players they thought they would have that would in Jordan Morris that would make a major difference. But Svensson here just sets the tone. His blast from, which is at least 35 yards out, set the tone for the whole game and just gave them that bit of confidence. And that's what you need sometimes, is for a midfielder to just step up and just, I actually think that ball is still traveling somewhere with the pace he hits it at. And then you just see the whole team kind of pick up and just go, absolutely we can win this. And absolutely we'll concede a goal or two, but like we can overpower them. And I think somebody on MLSsoccer.com said it, and I'm sure lots of people are thinking it now, is like, Seattle is good at the late surge in the season, and it's going to be really troublesome for teams like the Whitecaps to have this sleeper team that's done so poorly all season all of a sudden start to steadily climb the table with performances like that to show that they can beat one of the best teams in the league.
Soccer is not basketball, and you can't just add one player and have one player's play completely swing things. But the addition of the right piece can really help change momentum.
Yeah, and Svensson's not a new player. Like, he's an established player at the club in a relatively short period of time. But mm-hmm. it's also about the play on the field, that you get some everybody plays better when you see a player do something like that. Not just produce a wonder goal, but have the wherewithal to even think to have the wonder goal. And it gives that team a bit of hope. And there was a number of games this week where we can look at that and see the influence that it has. It's not the individual performance. It's what that performance has on the collective that then goes like, oh, shit, well, if we can score that kind of goal, we can certainly hang on and win this match. And what and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the ones that I was looking at, you know, something that always creates headlines is going to be Wayne Rooney's first MLS goal. And he scored it. But this was the DC 2 Colorado 1 was the other real disaster team. Just two teams that seem to not be able to get much right. I mean, DC gets the win, but they get a win off of an own goal. Rooney's goal is it was good. He could not have made Tim Howard look more stupid. Cause he just...
It was funny to watch a former Everton star against a former Everton star. Just. Also, I felt like Tim Howard beefed that one. It was a great goal for Rooney, but it's such a tight angle, and he just completely gets the play wrong there.
Kellen Acosta on his first goal or first game for Colorado.
That's right. Fresh in from Dallas.
Yep, he made his mark, but
after missing a penalty.
But he said, "Oh yeah, that's true." But he plays for Colorado, and you can't count on anything. when it comes to that, these teams are. Even though, you know, DC is not always awful, or DC's potential is not the worst ever, but they're in the same place in terms of
it's energy true.
And their ability.
My play of the week here is Rooney decides to celebrate his first MLS goal by smashing his nose to pieces, defending in his own box,
amazing,
pulling a full Jeb Brovsky, and just... One of the things I love is that in MLS, like, you know, or in any league, when a player gets injured and there's sort of like blood and then they like pull away, and this one they're just like, oh, it's really gushing. Get in there. And just all these tight angles of just Rooney's face covered in blood.
It's iconic.
When I went, like, I feel like they're doing this on purpose because, you know, they're trying to like birth a legend here in DC, and fair play, you know, like. Rooney would have been a hero regardless of what he's done there, but the fact that to put his body on the line and take the hit like that, I think is going to enshrine him in DC United folklore for some time to come.
The old wrestling maxim is red equals green. And you can make a little money off that. The DC also lost. This was a win after they lost at midweek against New York. Bradley Wright Phillips scoring the lone goal and having my favorite of two secret hidden jersey messages, which is
he
was on 99 goals.
I only just saw that today.
He scored his 100th and he took off his jersey and he had been wearing a complete full authentic jersey that also had his name and the number 100 underneath it. He was so sure that he played that game in two shirts.
Tells you so much about the type of player he is. And I believe it was the fastest 100 in MLS, I believe, or
I'm not sure about that. I don't know the statistic involved, but
sorry, BWP. But I feel like it's one of those things where he's so consistently good as you almost just overlook him entirely.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, of course, Bradley Wright Phillips scored a couple of goals, New York won. And it takes something like this to kind of make you go like, this is not a young man.
No.
But he really is a goal-scoring machine and a bit of a wizard. And I kind of made a note to myself of like, stop just overlooking the fact that BWP scores goals every single week. And pay attention to what he does, because he really is a brilliant player. and playing like a player that's 5 years younger than he is.
That goal was also, like, I kind of talk him up a little bit as like a poacher to a certain degree, but that wasn't a poacher's goal.
No. I think the thing that you forget sometimes is, like, a player gets known for a certain type of play or style of scoring goals. There's not really too many types of goals that Bradley Wright Phillips can't score. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not incredible in the air, but we've seen him score headers. We've seen him hang out and ride that line of maybe just possibly being offside to get the poacher's goal, but he can do it all.
He really helped once, you know, Columbus beat them 3-0 on the weekend, or 3-2 on the weekend. It could have been 3-0. He kind of got things moving in terms of he's mostly responsible for the Jonathan Mensah own goal. After Mensah scores the first, he has his own goal, unfortunately, but it ends up not mattering because despite that and the beautiful ball from Kaku that finds Danny Royer, Columbus was able to hold on.
And, yeah, I was really happy to see this result for Columbus because, you know, they've been a little bit off as of late and not as sharp as we've seen from them. And giving up goals, and this was another one where we saw them give up goals. But this was notable because it's Columbus's first road win since May. Which is a significant period of time.
That's true. They've had an up and down year, you know. They're still in fourth, and that's a testament to how well they did the start, but.
And I think that Columbus really played this one to a T where they knew that New York would score goals. I think if you're playing Red Bulls, you kind of just have to accept that that's going to happen. Mm. Bradley Wright Phillips was not on the pitch to begin with. He did get subbed in eventually. And I think that helped. Mm-hmm. But the thing with if you're going to play New York Red Bulls, I feel like this is the game that writes the script for how to beat this team. Is you have to hit them early. And a lot of teams show them a little bit too much respect, let them settle into a pattern, and then they just overwhelm you and destroy you with possession and ability to execute in the final third. There's no question that they can execute in the final third. What's questionable is if you test that back line early on, everything seems to kind of break down for them. And yes, they will find a way to claw themselves back into the game. But if you can test them just enough... Mm-hmm. Sure, they'll claw their way back into the game, but it's not going to be good enough. And this was brilliant execution from Columbus to just do all the right things, put the ball in the right places, and play with a clinical precision that we haven't seen them play with at home or away in a while now.
No, that was it was a great result for them.
It's interesting to think, too, is like they're sitting fourth just below New York Red Bulls. And they're trailing by 5 points, but, you know, they're quietly putting together a good postseason run for themselves. And you have to think with all the pieces that could move in the Eastern Conference, Columbus is making a case for how they may just hang on to their playoff spot.
If they can hold, and they are comfortably well clear of the teams in a dangerous position, if they can just hold their position... that could be the sort of apocryphal team that gets into the post, is able to just scrap their way in, and or not scrap their way in if they hold, but you know what I mean? Like, have an up and down season and then be able to redouble their efforts in the postseason campaign.
You really can't see, like, Philadelphia Union and New England Revolution, I see possibly switching places. Chicago and Orlando are below the mark. I don't think they're going to make any runs for the playoffs in anytime soon. It's Toronto and DC duking it out.
The narrative desperately needs them to both do something, but I don't know that they will.
No, of course. But as I keep bringing up, and I'm sorry I do it, DC United is also 4 games in hand of all the teams that are above them. At least. In Chicago Fire, they're actually 6 games in hand. So, if they can pull off some incredible performances, and, like, who knows, it may not happen, but it could happen. And the other teams in front of them continue to drop points. We could see Columbus Crew hang on, and, you know, maybe Montreal Impact, with the way they've been playing, hang on. DC could get that final spot.
It's open, especially when you think of how many points that represents. That would be interesting to see, but it's something that the league would love to see for sure. Another thing the league would love to make happen is this derby with LA Galaxy and LAFC.
I think we might have the same notes on this one.
I actually thought this was much better than the game earlier in the season. It was a 2-2 draw.
I agree, yeah.
Everybody was so excited about this Zlatan goal, and Zlatan had the interview before where he said, "And I wasn't even fit." But you had here, you know, a great goal, a great game that showcases the strengths that the teams have developed over the course of the season. Carlos Vela with a great early effort. Alessandrini rescuing things once LAFC has the 2-0 lead to get Galaxy on the board. Zlatan, I can't believe I'm saying this, was too selfless in a pass that came to nothing, where he could have taken the shot himself. I can't believe I'm saying that.
I can believe you're saying it, because as we know and we've talked about, Zlatan is a much smarter player than he makes himself out to be. Mm. Yeah, my note here was also MLS is really pushing this El Tráfico thing to be a thing when it's not really a thing. Like, you don't feel the sense of rivalry, really. I kind of felt like this was a game of two halves, where LAFC won the first half and LA won the second half, and that's why we have a 2-2 draw here. Wynn got on the board for the first time at LAFC with an absolutely fucking amazing free kick.
Yep.
That, for me, was a good reminder of, like, okay, a player we've slagged off a little bit in the past and you sort of forgot was good, that is about as tasty of a free kick as you can see, where he beats the wall but still has somehow gets the ball down enough that it's not in the top corner, actually dips just below the wall and goes into the far low corner.
No doubt.
Beautiful. And then Marc-Anthony Kay breaks his ankle and LA Galaxy pounce on it.
Is that true? And is he out? Like, I didn't know that he broke his ankle.
Yeah, he's going to need surgery. He's out.
Oh, that's so terrible. Oh, I know. I love Marc-Anthony Kay. Marc-Anthony Kay.
Yeah, I know. I was... the initial report was he did something to his ankle and he was off, which wasn't great, but it's broken. He's going to need surgery. That's basically his season done, which is so unfortunate for such a upstart Canadian talent at such a high-profile club. I was super pissed about reading that news. We wish him the best, but...
I'm going to see New York City FC without David Villa and LAFC without Marc-Anthony Kay. That's definitely the same thing.
Basically, he's just been so good for them. And it's great, too, to see that a lot of commentators have been asking the same question. If he's been so key for them in midfield, how is LAFC going to fill that void? And as bad as Galaxy has been for stretches, this game really highlighted the cracks that are in that team. This is they're a fun expansion side, a lot of goal scorers, and at points, good defense. And this is one of those games where they just kind of capitulated and gave it up.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I was a little worried for the Galaxy striker Ola Kamara, who had seemingly like so much time with an empty net that I was like, oh, if you don't score this, it's gonna fucking ruin your life. But he got it in.
Yeah.
And I
continue to delight in seeing him excel at this club, because it does seem like the right fit, and he's had a couple of ups and downs this season with them, but you do forget he's a clinical finisher. He did extremely well at Columbus because of that. And it's also good to see a player like that not rest on their laurels or hit a ceiling. I feel like he's gotten better at LA Galaxy.
No doubt. My other favorite hidden message of the week. Unfortunately, Montreal had that, you know, went down 2-0 and then was not able to come back all the way. But when they did, when Ignacio Piatti finally scored the goal to make it 2-1 against Atlanta at home, he pulled his jersey up and he had written on his chest, "Feliz cumpleaños a moi." Happy birthday to me. Oh,
pretty good.
It was great. Two
pretty good
from Josep Martinez.
However, he's when you're playing Martinez FC, you got to have something special in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. My question about, like, I feel like talking about Atlanta anymore is kind of boring because they're just they are what they are. Do you think they'll be able to keep Martinez? And if not, what do they do without him? Not that they've shown any lack of ability to bring in high-profile players, but Martinez is the real deal. I believe he's at 24 goals now this week. Not that he scored all of those this week, but it felt like it, I'm sure, to certain teams.
It's hard to say because, you know, we say this every time there's a European window. You know that Martinez, or for his time in the league, we've been saying, oh, he's not going to be here for long. Almiron's not going to be here for long. But there is now, we're recording this on the 31st. There's only one more month of the window, and I haven't heard any smoke to that fire. I haven't seen any smoke to that fire.
You know, I meant not necessarily like imminently. Mm-hmm. I think both players will be around till the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But you do start to think about, okay, well, if Alphonso Davies, for all of his talents, incredible talents, is going for 12 million euro, mm-hmm. Josef Martinez?
Well, here's the...
if you think what he could do for some English sides, like, I see him as a sort of a maybe slightly less finessed Alexis Sanchez. You go, at a certain point, Atlanta, not that they're hurting for cash, but there's just offers that you can't turn down. And no, we haven't heard rumors necessarily, and I believe they'll both finish out the season. But there's been rumors swirling around Almiron. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of go, like, what do you do as a coach then? Do you try to replace the player like for like and accept that you're maybe only keeping these players for 2 years at a time?
I honestly think that if we can't look that far ahead to the winter window when it comes to Atlanta, because as long as they can keep both of those players in place through the end of August, especially in the Eastern Conference, you've got to think of them as real contenders much more than last year. In a lot of the teams that were many of the teams that were contenders last year are not as the same level as they are now. The answer is, if they win MLS Cup, it doesn't matter. Right? Like if they win MLS Cup, it's going to be such a different, it changes the picture. Even if they even if they win the Eastern Conference and they make it to the final. If
regardless, 'cause they did kind of shit the bed last year a little bit. Like they did so, ever so well, they got into the playoffs and then just sort of slowly collapsed and people figured them out.
If they are leaving and they have to find a replacement that continues to garner the goodwill of the fans versus if they have delivered so early and created this bond so early that they have a little bit of capital with the fans, is a completely different situation.
Yeah, agreed. I think I agree that, like, they'll both see out the season and you're potentially thinking about, you know, $20-30 million coming into the club for either player at this point. Mm-hmm. Which sets you up for a very different thing. And like you said, like, so what, you lose your best player, but, you know, it's a club already with money and talent and a great manager, a world-class manager. What can you do with that money? Because they've already done it in some sense.
Who needs Almiron when you have Julian Gressel?
True. Fair enough.
That's not necessarily true, but I do love Julie Gressel, so I had to get that in there. I don't know why. I just
at key points he's stepped up. You know, they're a full squad. We know why they're doing ever so well. We got two more matches, I believe.
Yeah,
to cover. SKC continues to slide a little bit. Sorry, I'm just roller coasting here.
Do it.
And more questions are kind of being asked both of and from Vermees about his side. And Dallas, that's been a little bit jumpy this season. And Barrios, who has not scored this year,
gets his hat trick. What happened? Like, this is the thing. Is that I didn't have my research in place, but this Barrios scores three goals. That are his first three goals this season. Is what explains this? Michael Barrios.
I think what explains this is that SKC is again beginning to show, like as we've seen with other top teams, beginning to show the cracks a little bit, and they've been very, very fortunate. They've been very, very solid. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand what the offensive collapse has been, because Aikopara, who's been ever so good, and that whole back line that's been basically impenetrable for most of the season, is all of a sudden maybe just running out of gas a little bit and making simple mistakes. And it literally happens to every MLS team at some point in the season where they just have a dip. So that's on SKC to figure out. But I think part of this too is that Dallas has gotten back to doing what they've done well in the last 2-3 years, which is defend. I feel like Matt Hedges is the player of this match. And the one that makes a difference with a few really, really key tackles that, again, gives the rest of the team confidence to go, okay, if we've got that behind us, what can we do in front of us?
Yeah, no doubt.
But I feel like there's been too many times this season where Dallas is really having to all defend as a team and get kind of out of sorts, and then everybody loses confidence, and you begin to see how you can break Dallas down. In terms of the Barrios thing, I don't know. I'd love to ask him to find out.
It really felt in that second, and as you're talking about the defensive issues, we always said that SKC is built around that defense in the minimal amount of goals allowed. So seeing them in a three goal scenario is unfamiliar. But the look, the fury on friend of the show Tim Melia's face when that second goal went past him, really looks like the fury that you see of keepers that are getting really let down by their defenses and are getting let down. Like it's what you see in a bad MLS team's goalkeeper that is just so furious with their defense. And SKC's not there yet, but if you're looking at the issue, like, is this a strong defense or a weak defense? Reactions like that would indicate to me that there are problems.
And sometimes it's only just a few bad results that mean that your defensive line doesn't press as high as they should, is a little bit less locked into to where the play might come in. I've experienced it. And, you know, you have a couple of bad games and that's just in your head. So I feel like for SKC, this is really just a mental battle. But it does show that if you give Dallas the space, they're still going to punish teams. And similarly, we were talking about another match, but this is kind of, to me, the one where they're writing the script on how to beat SKC.
Yeah, no doubt. One of the nice, points for SKC was this beautiful, beautiful goal from Gerso, who splits two defenders and is off balance and manages to hit a shot away to equalize at 1-1. But they just weren't. They didn't score again until the 97th minute. You can't. It's great.
Can't rely on VAR calls to give you 9.5 added minutes of time.
Yeah.
Gotta get it done. But this truly is like Matt Hedges has not had a standout season. I think he's by far one of the best center backs in MLS, and it was great to just see that on display as well. Of there's so we've talked so much about poor defending in MLS, and yes, SKC still got two goals away, but Matt Hedges is a fun center back to watch.
Mm-hmm. The this wasn't one of them. There was one other thing I want to say about Kansas City, but I didn't see the Galaxy Orlando.
The one game you should have seen.
Should I go? Should I? Not the one. Is it a Justin? Wow! I'm looking at the score sheet. How about that? I didn't see it. They hadn't uploaded it yet to the YouTube channel, so.
Let me break it down for you.
Please do.
Orlando still sucks and is the unluckiest team in MLS. And they had chances here, clearly, because they scored three goals. But Ashley Cole is still terrible at man marking. He's a great player, but I do not understand why they rely on their left back to be their central defender and be the only person making a move in the box. Ibrahimovic gets his first hat trick, and this is one where you go, like, I don't think it would have mattered who this game was against. And it just sucks for Orlando that it was against Ibrahimovic and co.
So you think that...
I feel like Orlando played as well as they could have, turned out one of the better performances they've turned out in a long, long time, get the three goals, pounce on everything that you could exploit about LA Galaxy, which is that their defensive back line is a little pathetic, score three goals, and still come up empty. But when you're serving balls into the box to Ibrahimovic, like, there's not one of those three goals that isn't just kind of impossible to stop.
So it's not an inflated thing because of the quality of the opposition.
I think it says as much about LA Galaxy as it says about Orlando. I mean, LA Galaxy gave up three goals to Orlando, and from some great players. Dwyer got a goal that was a fantastic header in, but again, it's goalkeeping errors, it's defensive errors, and just a. Anytime you see a team score against Orlando, you don't see the midfielders defending against the play or stepping up to block the shot. You see the defenders trying to scramble to get back into place because they're pressing so high. And I get the sense of urgency in needing to do that, but it's become a real weak point for Orlando where if you catch them on the counter, you can just cut through them like butter. It's just way, way, way too easy for teams. And again, I'm not a person that wants to mark against Ibrahimovic anytime soon. But why is there nobody marking him? Why are you giving him that much space? He can score from literally any angle in any way possible. I believe he has two headers in this game. Mm-hmm. And it's just a failure of players willing to get back and put pressure on him. And it's not just out of respect to Ibrahimovic. This is the way Orlando has played consistently this season, is they're allowing players at the top of the box way, way too much space and just being, they're really leaving it to the back four. And, you know, the midfielders are nowhere in sight, nowhere closing down the player. There should be three players on Ibrahimovic closing down those plays. None of them was there more than one.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, you got to think that, you know, even though he's got the quality, he's so easily scoutable. That seems like, you know, something that you almost can't overdo. Is marking Ibrahimovic.
Yeah, I mean, you can see him a mile away. Mm-hmm. It's the tall douchebag with the ponytail. Like, figure it out. Yeah.
That's odd. So
I don't know what that means for both teams for their season, really. It feels like LA Galaxy is making a late surge, and you know they're in a good position, but the West is still tight. And I still feel like we've seen a lot of the vulnerabilities of LA Galaxy.
Is he your team of the week?
Ibrahimovic?
Yes.
No. My team of the week, for the first time ever, is the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Yeah, it was a good week. It was
a good week. And as good as Davies did, Reyna was there, Felipe was there, Tiber was there, Nowinski was there, Marinovic was there. I felt like this was a much, much tidier performance, despite giving up the two goals. I cried two times, so they're my team of the week. Aww. Who's your team of the week?
You know what? I'm going to give it to... Or the one thing that I got to say about that, about what makes it so important to beat Minnesota, is that Minnesota is a team that could definitely gobble up Vancouver's spot. It is important. It is very important to beat them specifically, because these points will be so important. They are just 1 point apart, and these points will be so important to deciding whether or not the Whitecaps get in the playoffs or not.
I agree.
I was going to pick Seattle. Those two, you know, it's a long trip. It's a long trip up the table, but, you know, it's a great time to get 6 points.
Mine was an emotional choice, but I think that's sound. Huh. Ers.
Da, 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 da.
No, that they had a pretty spectacular performance this week. Two performances, I should say.
So we talk about do we want to do All-Star first, or do we want to talk Gaudi first?
I think we can do both.
So
clearly it's the end of the day for me. Okay, it's much later for you, but my brain just died. I was like, "What do you want to do?" And I'm like, "Both. Which order? Both."
Actually, let's say this. What was your goal of the week?
My goal of the week was Svensson. Come on, man. That strike. The cannon.
It was pretty pretty.
What was yours?
The first, you know, it isn't the greatest goal. The actual goal. No, the Gerso. The first thing that pops into mind is the Albus Powell DeBlanco play. But Gerso's the better goal.
All right.
So let's talk. Portland said their goodbyes to Fernando Addy. He is going to be made the first FC Cincinnati designated player, which really makes my head spin. That to remember that FC Cincinnati is going to be an MLS team as of next year.
Why is that?
Well, it's like they weren't even on. They weren't even. Their shield wasn't even added to the. To the MLS page until a couple weeks ago. Like there was so much fanfare around those two, but because Cincinnati has been performing so well as a club, it's like and Cincinnati will be here. So like the idea that Addy is such a key player that I think is great to build your team around. But I wasn't even, it's like, you know, before LA comes around, you know, LA, like you're planning your thoughts about next year around LA having an expansion draft. And it was the same for Atlanta and Minnesota the year before. It's like, that still hasn't really come into my mind yet for Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But Fernando Addy is a great get. There's been some weirdness around the fact that he was bought with future TAM. And whether or not he's going to join them in USL.
Okay, yeah. So I don't understand the whole MLS space money thing, as we've established on previous episodes. But I feel like it's... My understanding was he is joining USL. This was his last game for Portland Timbers, and he will be playing in USL for the remainder of the season.
That is correct.
FC Cincinnati is well above their opponents in the table, but you just got to feel like if you're a USL coach hoping to make a late run, you're just like, fuck.
One note that I heard that I thought was kind of funny is that Montreal had tried to trade for him and were passed down. And now they're trying to, I had heard a rumor that they were trying to negotiate with Cincinnati to get him for just the half season.
Huh. Interesting.
Which, I mean, like, I feel like that's only a win-win for Cincinnati. They should take that deal.
Yeah, if they're going to pay his wages. Because it's, they're kind of going to win the league. That's almost sort of guaranteed at this point. It is interesting. And Fernando Addy has been a fantastic service to the Timbers in his time there. But it does kind of say, I did think it said something about his ambition that he's not really had a firm starting spot for Timbers, that he was willing to go to USL. And I feel like my interpretation of this is he's hit his ceiling and he knows it. Mm-hmm. And so he's looking to get on the ground floor of an expansion club where he's going to be the star again, because he's been eclipsed at Portland.
Yeah.
That there's no forward player in Portland right now that I feel like is worse than him, that he would be able to take the spot of. And so it's interesting too that there were other clubs in other continents looking at him and offering deals, and he specifically wanted to stay in MLS and then to also take the temporary demotion to USL to play in Cincinnati. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but I just go, I think Addy knows that he's hit his ceiling and knows that if he goes to another bigger club, it might seem like a better opportunity, but he may not get the minutes and he may struggle there. That makes Whereas sense. A team like FC Cincinnati is going to be playing him starting every game and needing him to be a key piece of the team.
There have been times where it made sense, where it would have made sense for Addy to leave the league based on his reputation for what he was doing for Portland. This is not one of them. I think that you could look to, it's unfortunate because it's a ceiling thing. You're absolutely right. I feel like he's clicked a little bit better with a little bit more opportunity sometimes, but Samuel Armenteros has been doing so well for Portland that there really wasn't space for him.
Yeah, and I feel like it even in a way says less about him and more about the players they've brought in.
Yeah.
I think Addy has continued to perform well, and maybe not as well, but every player is going to experience a dip. But I do feel like this is kind of one where you go, like, he wants to be a star again and wants to run the show and really be the focus of the club, and he'll get that at FC Cincinnati. And I'm excited. Is it the end of the day yet? I'm excited to see what he brings.
Well, he's going to become one of the USL All-Stars. We were recording this on Tuesday. The MLS All-Star game is tomorrow. It will be without still injured David Villa. It will be without Fritz Prest. Zlatan Ibrahimovic will take a one-game suspension because of it, which I think is, you know, fine for him. I mean, you know, he may as well bench him anyways. I think the issue really comes down to not having a break and making it a midweek game. Do you care about this?
Mm-hmm. No. No, I mean, here's what I think. I will probably try to catch some of the MLS All-Star game, and I kind of hope this is the last year they do it. I feel like it was invented to build attention to the league. I feel like we've got the attention, and it's done at such a weird time where every team needs their best players. They need them fit and healthy. And I get the relationship building with European soccer that they do through it, but it just, I mean, does anyone really care about this? I know it's a distinctly American thing, so maybe that's helped. Informing my opinion of it, but I just, yeah, I don't care, really.
You make a good point.
I care that Alphonso Davies comes back healthy and continues to help us rise through the table until he leaves.
That, and you know, is interesting as it is to see, you know, matchups like Giovinco against Juventus, it's like, you've got to think that every team is just thinking, come back healthy, please, please, please.
Well, and I don't even think it's that interesting. Watching the press conference today, it's like they're trying to, like, create this story about Giovinco playing his former club, and he's like, but it was a while ago. He's like, yeah, I still keep in touch with some of the guys.
They're using
but
that...
it's also it's also a friendly match. Like, no one gives a shit.
They're using that story because they wrote that script for Zlatan.
Yeah.
They
exactly.
They can just reuse it. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS on Twitter. And I think maybe we need to start an Instagram. I feel like Twitter's not a great thing for us. I don't know. Should I tack that on after I just promoted it, being like, I don't know if it's working?
Please come to our Twitter.
Also, right, yes, Twitter's great. It's a great place to talk about soccer, and you should definitely follow us on Twitter, which some people have done.
If you follow us at That's So MLS, and if that's already taken for some reason, in the minutes after we get off the podcast, we'll announce it on the Twitter. I'm going to New York City this weekend for New York City Whitecaps and probably New York Red Bulls versus LAFC. So I should be able to get some good snaps.
I hope so. I'm always happy when I remember that we actually have a proper journalist on our team. Where I can just be like, I cried a little, I had feelings at the game, and you're like, I talked to Alfonso Davies, and I'm like, oh,
soccer is about feelings, it's fine.
True. True. I'm here for the feelings. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor for Howler magazine at whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at www.thatsomls.com, on iTunes and wherever good podcasts are found.
You can do it. Not too many players got sent off, so I feel like it's a weird sign-off this week because there was few red cards.
There are two players that got sent off, but they got sent off for the same thing, and that is stepping on people's feet. So until next week, don't step on feet. Don't get sent off.
Don't step on people's feet. Twew.